You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, it is a Tuesday. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You got Paul Gallant at Gallant Says on Twitter. I'm at Sports Vanessa. Our producer, as always, is Sean Mapes, and we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call or shoot us a text on our text line, 713-780-ESPN. Yesterday, the Texans had a little shindig. Nice little golf outing.
Yes, they did.
They raised money. They always do a really good job of that
event. And we saw a couple of the key figures of the organization. We saw Nick Caserio. We saw Lovie Smith. And we saw Cal McNair.
We don't hear very often from Cal McNair. And you know where I stand on this. I want to hear from owners as much as possible just because I think that no matter how much or how little they say, it is good to have that inside insight. We didn't get a lot from Cal McNair. We played some of that sound earlier in the day.
We got frustrating comments. Let's just leave it at
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but Lovie Smith, I think, is always a little bit more candid. And what we heard from Lovie Smith, I remember when I was at the NFL Combine at those press conferences, was him talking about how big they had needs at secondary. Now, the whole roster has needs, you could argue, of course, but secondary was a position that the Texans really struggled to capitalize on last year. When Lovie Smith met with the media yesterday at said golf outing, he talked a little bit about how he does genuinely think some of those needs have been addressed.
If you just go back to my comments I've made, I didn't think we were good enough on the back end to really take another step. Cornerback was one of those positions I talked about. I think we addressed it in free agency with Steve Nelson and, of course, with Sting. So we're better now. And it's just not him. Jalen Petrie, too. We did a lot of research on him. And thought he would really fit in with what we do, fit the profile, you know, at that safety position. So we'll, and when you draft players, some programs, hey, we're going to let them sit around for a few years and see what they can do. All right, if they're good enough to play, they'll play early. And if not, eventually they'll be ready to go. They'll play then.
I mean, it's one of the pros/cons of being a team that struggled, right, is that your rookies are going to play immediately, most likely, or
yeah,
they could.
Yeah, right into the fire.
Sometimes that's not a good thing because they need that time to sit back and learn. Other times you may have, like, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, somebody turning out to be a really, really solid rookie and doing a great job.
I want to circle back to the beginning of that clip of audio there. So you heard Lovie Smith speak, and he basically said what process I went through to think that the Texans were going to take a cornerback with one of those two first-round picks. You say, well, if you listen to what I was talking about our corner play last year, and there had been some rumors over the last couple of weeks about the Texans being involved in Giants cornerback James Bradbury trade discussions before he was released yesterday. More on that in just a moment. But I think if you're looking as far as how much power Lovie Smith has, I feel like when Lovie Smith is saying, yeah, well, I told you that this is what I want, this is what I looked for, this is what I was looking for, Lovie Smith's input is being valued as a part of the long-term operations of this organization, which is certainly interesting because, you know, it's an older head coach that's being hired. It's a guy that also just came out of nowhere as far as his actual hiring. Mm-hmm. Whatever happened from the time where the Texans were supposedly in on Josh McCown to eventually deciding to hire Lovie Smith,
a.k.a. Brian Flores.
Right. Lovie Smith must have, I think, put together a very compelling case as to why he should be a part of roster building. Maybe it was pointing back to his time in Chicago or in Tampa Bay and things that he would have done differently. Hindsight is always 20/20, so how much of that can you believe? But I think the takeaway I have from that clip is that Lovie Smith is involved with what Nick Caserio is looking for. It's like significantly involved, which could be good, could also be bad.
I said the day after the draft or the couple days after the draft, I thought that hug clip was significant. And not just in a like, oh, it's cute, Nick Caserio and Lovie Smith hugged. But I don't ever remember Bill O'Brien hugging anybody. In fact, I remember Bill O'Brien yelling at Jack Easterby over the Zoom, as Bill had said. I do think it's a big deal that the two of them are working together, and I hope it works out for the better because I think they have way different perspectives. I think you're talking about an analytics-driven, you know, guy in his, Nick Caserio, early 40s.
Who was with the Patriots,
right,
too.
I mean, then you have Lovie Smith. This is his third go-round as a head coach. He's had to deal with not great quarterback situations.
He's been in some unstable situations.
Right. And so these are two different perspectives. So I think it's, when it comes to that, you have two opposite cooks in the same kitchen, and it could be really beneficial. But to your point, that soundbite certainly made it sound like Lovie is a big part of that process, which I doubted. When he said Lovie was going to be involved in Lovie's press conference, I thought, yeah, right, because they didn't involve David Coley. So far, I've been proven wrong, and it seems like Lovie has been super involved.
Well, the pretty clear difference between David Coley and
Lovie
Smith.
What could it be? That one had experience and the other didn't.
Yeah, there's that.
I love David Coley, though. Such a nice guy. All right, so there was supposed to be a trade, and things like this happen in the NFL. It's very fickle, where something almost will come through, and then obviously it won't. James Bradbury, one of the hottest free agents, apparently almost landed with the Texans. The Athletic, Dan Duggan, reporting that the Giants had agreed to trade Bradbury to Houston for a late-round pick, but the idea got scrapped when the Texans and Bradbury could not agree on contract terms.
He's a good player. I was bummed that this wasn't able to be accomplished, and I think it just points to, you know, that elephant in the room. While you might be happy about where the Texans are relative to where they used to be, they still got a long bleeping way to go. I mean, the reason that Bradbury, the trade could not be completed, it was because the Texans and Bradbury couldn't agree on a contract extension. Because Bradbury clearly doesn't want to be a part of a team that's not going to be good in the short term. So Bradbury, who doesn't want the extended stay in Houston, we'll see where he ends up. I think there's a lot of contenders that'll be looking to bring him in. This is a nice little present to find a $20 bill lying on the ground or in the couch or something like that.
The late stages of free agency.
Yeah, but you know, look, they have to hit on those draft picks, and they have a ton of them, but they will not be able to sign guys in free agency of consequence unless they are able to hit those draft picks. It is an upset, beyond upsets, that they have somehow convinced Brandon Cooks and Laremy Tunsil that this is the place for them in the short term. Like, that is, I think, a good thing to at the very least look at right now and say, okay, well, at the very least, they have stopped the rapids from raging throughout this organization. Everything was so choppy for such a long period of time, but still, it's going to be a while before they can convince people to sign here, unless they want to sign someone like Christian Kirk to a stupid contract when he's a number three wide receiver. And that's what the Jaguars did. And you know what? The Texans didn't. That's good.
And I think Nick Caserio will not do that. I will say when he's had conversations, when we asked him in media availability about what his like process is, and he basically said he looks at where a player is relative to what they should be paid and said that you don't always want to overpay. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but I don't see the Texans as being the Jags and making almost these panic moves where they're paying so much money for a guy that, I'm sorry, you don't know how much he's going to produce or how big of a difference it's going to be, you know, make when the Jags have been so bad. Former Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson will return to Houston on Friday. There are more depositions on the way related, of course, to the 22 civil lawsuits filed against him. So this is going to be this Friday. There was a nugget from a USA Today article that shocked me.
A nugget?
A little nugget. I must have missed this.
Some more dead bodies in Vegas.
Love the dead bodies in Vegas. Here for the Lake Mead.
Don't say it like that. It sounds necrophilia-ish.
None of the trials are going to go to court until next spring, if there are trials. There's apparently been an agreement from Rusty Harden and the quote-unquote parties that the trials will not take place, if they happen at all, because there, of course, still could be a settlement. They will not take place during football season. I missed where that agreement was made. Paul's making the money sign.
It probably was made in a duffel bag.
Could be.
Which was dropped off somewhere. That is surprising. I wonder how that affects to the suspension status. Because what happens if there's like a big settlement and the suspension wasn't very long for this coming season? Man, I wonder how long they're going to delay this. You may as well just do it now if you're the NFL too. It probably would speed up what's going on with Baker Mayfield, but maybe the NFL just thinks everyone's going to forget about this by the start of the regular season. And they'll have the Browns in primetime for as many games as they could. But, you know, yeah, we were touching on this like a couple of days ago, or maybe it was yesterday, where we were just wondering, okay, well, how many games in primetime are the Browns going to get?
Right.
If the schedule's released on Thursday, I mean, it would make sense for the NFL to just like figure out what they're doing with Deshaun Watson so that they can put like the good Browns games at the back of the schedule.
They say, Roger Goodell says the investigation has not been concluded. Do you believe him? Or do you think they already know what they're doing?
Yes, they already know what
they're doing. They already know. They're just not saying.
I mean, this Mary Jo, whatever the hell her name is, she's essentially like continuously being hired to look at things. Why do you think she keeps on getting hired? Because she's not doing too much digging?
Right.
Because she's like saying like, oh, okay.
Internal investigation.
Oh, here's a bag of cash for me to look the other way. Oh, great. We're doing things the South American way.
Now Paul has his tinfoil hat on.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see what happens with that, but definitely interesting that Deshaun will not go to trial, if he goes to trial at all, during football season. All right, coming up, some big news in the NIL, plus an NBA superstar trying to get a sports media superstar fired. That's next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real. Fun. Sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, it is a Tuesday. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes coming at you. ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Of course, you can see us on Twitch and you can tweet us, text us, call us, all of the good things. We knew NIL would get messy, right? I mean, at some point. At some point, name, image, likeness was going to cause a little bit of a stir. And I think it has among coaches, among kids, among players. They love it. They're making a lot of money. But the messaging and the rules are dicey at best. And now the NCAA is trying to crack down on boosters' involvements in NIL and trying to get kids to come. And are they abiding by the NIL laws in their respective states?
Oh, God. Of course. Of course. Oh, we've got to step in the way. It's getting out of control, and we aren't able to monetize it for ourselves. So now there's going to be some sort of BS regulation, and I suppose that this will level the playing field or something. Whatever.
Some of the newest rules that came out yesterday, an NIL agreement between a booster and an NIL entity may not be guaranteed or promised contingent on the initial or continuing enrollment. Essentially, they want boosters to have less power in getting kids to go to universities. The other thing that makes this messy is that NIL laws are different in every state.
Yeah.
There's not like one, you know, huge law for all of the NCAA. And there's no NCAA czar or person that, you know, it's one of the issues with like...
What? Not Mark Emmert and his beautiful hair?
Yeah. Oh, God.
It is beautiful hair.
It's good hair.
He's got great hair, assuming it's real.
But you, when NIL came to fruition, I mean, look, these kids, you could argue, have deserved to make money off of their name, image, and likeness for a long time. But I do think that these rules are going to continue to change. They're going to continue to get dicey. And since the beginning of time, you've had boosters giving money to these kids under the table. I don't see that changing.
Yeah, you're going to stop them? Boosters have been doing this under the table for a while, and you somewhat legalized it, and they will find ways now. Now that it has been somewhat, I mean, you can launder that booster money some way, shape, or form. Whoa, I just made a donation to the Fella McFellapants School of Business at Insert School, and somehow that money was funneled from the School of Business into Insert Random Star, Five-Star Prospect Quarterback's pocket. You're going to be able to find ways around it. So I guess this makes things a little bit more confusing, but no one cares about sanctions anymore. You know, you see all of these programs that get it. Does anyone actually find themselves morally outraged or pissed off when a massive school that their school might be rival with their favorite school when they do stuff like this? Because everyone knows this is how it's done. I find it weird that they're trying to step in, you know, and like this is going to potentially change the way things are done. The ship has sailed.
Ross Dellinger is the one that probably, when I was looking through Twitter, because with this NIL stuff, I don't know about you, but I always have the desire to pull like a Michael Scott and say, explain it to me like I'm five. Because it'll be these long articles with different language and legal language. Ross Dellinger, who does a lot of reporting for the Sports Illustrated as a writer, said the board of directors adopted NIL guidelines that clarify existing bylaws prohibiting boosters from recruiting. So schools with boosters who have induced prospects through NIL will be investigated. Boosters who have induced prospects, that's like every NIL deal. I mean, when you're a top booster at Texas, which not that Texas has had success, but they have the NIL deals. They have the biggest budget in college football, or one of, if not the biggest. This is going to keep happening, and I don't know why the NCAA thinks they're going to be able to control it.
Also, like, how do you define whether an NIL deal is an inducement to stay or right. just a NIL deal? Like, Bijan Robinson, the Texas running back, having an NIL deal with the Austin Lambo dealership.
Car, right? Yeah.
How do we, like, how do you parse whether that is a, you know, a quote-unquote, like, honest NIL deal, or you look and it's like, oh, actually the guy who runs Austin Lambo is a UT grad, and he wants to give the running back a car.
So there would probably be, in their opinion, a line that cannot be crossed as far as total dollars, right? Wouldn't that make the most sense? They say, like, hey, if it's a local deal that's worth, I don't know, let's say $100,000 or something like that, to them, maybe that's the rule. And then here's what they're doing. They're being anti-American. They're being communists. They're limiting what a person can make. Well, that's what they'd be doing. They're just taking a piss on capitalism.
I mean, they've been doing that for a century, to be fair.
They keep on doing it. I mean, that's all this is. I'm sorry. I mean, I get it. Like, the balance of power in college football is being lost. And some of these old coaches are getting pissed off that they have to put in more effort to their very high-paying jobs that they get bought out of and make a ton of money. But, like, I mean, well, what are we doing here other than trying to stop people from making money that it has no bearing on the rest of the athletic programs? It's not taking money away. Like, people are choosing to pay these students, athletes, money. And you're going to stop them from doing it? Like, come on, guys. This is ridiculous.
We talked a little bit a couple of weeks ago when Jay Wright announced that he was retiring for basketball coaching a relatively young age. In his early 60s, the combination of social media and these brands with NIL plus the transfer portal, I'm not ever going to say that I feel sorry for coaches that make millions of dollars in basketball or football. Like, you're just not going to hear me say that. But I do think NIL is going to impact that. And the NCAA is going to look at those things and say, okay, well, if coaches are retiring, if these guys are in player empowerment mode, if the transfer portal is out of whack, do we need to rein it in? To which I say, it's too late. I mean, they messed this up so badly and waited so long to try and give players any freedom that they're going to take all they can get.
Yeah, they had, like, years of this was coming around across the horizon because it was going to the Supreme Court. And they lost their Supreme Court hearing, the noted partisan Supreme. They lost it 9-0. There's not a single Supreme Court justice that thought the way that they were doing it was legal as far as labor laws go in America. So
Sean, you're smart.
Thank you. They had months and years to, like, get their ducks in a row because this was coming. And now they're passing trying to pass some NCAA rule, like, what, a year after NIL has already started?
Nuts. Right. And if they rein it in too, here's the other thing that happens. The rich schools will just leave, and the NCAA will die just there, like, immediately. If you're telling Texas or Texas A&M boosters how their money is no longer a part of it, are those people going to just say, oh, yeah, that's fine? No, they're going to say, bleep off, NCAA. Let's go form our own thing. And we're close to that already with the SEC.
Yeah, because they already have, a lot of these schools have, like, these booster NIL collectives, where basically these boosters are throwing money in a pot.
That's right.
And then out of that pot, they are, you know, hey, every offensive lineman gets $50,000 in a, you know, sandwich deal or something. And really all it takes for that is the boosters to get all the money together and basically license out the, you know, Ohio State brand or the Texas brand or whatever. And then they can just have salary employees playing under the name of the university.
Sean's doing a very good job of explaining this.
He really is. And you know, the funny thing is
I feel dumb listening. I'm like, whoa.
Paul and I are like, we're paying attention like we're in class.
Seriously. Professor, maybe this is a new segment. Sean explains things to us.
It is.
Professor Mapes.
Yeah, Professor Mapes.
I mean, you have the glasses on right now.
It's happening.
If you had a blazer on, I mean, you would look like a tenured professor.
Thank you.
Lance McCullers Jr. / Mike McDaniel explains things to us. Okay, so explain this from a UT grad's perspective, from an alumni.
Explain inflation.
You see, what about the economy?
I can only deal with college football fake economy. I cannot deal with the real economy.
Fair enough.
Okay, so how do you think this affects Texas football? Because Texas football has been in a slump for so long. Do you think NIL makes things better or worse? Like, is Sarkisian happy or sad that Bijan gets this deal?
Yeah, no, it can't hurt because you're seeing it where USC is kind of getting their, stuff in order after a down like five-ish years where now they get a new coach. Now Caleb Williams coming. Now OU wide receivers are coming. They're in the mix for this Pitt wide receiver actually with Texas. So I think all it takes is just getting the right coach and the right kind of alignment from the boosters to the athletic director to all the way down to actually like figuring this out. And I don't think Steve Sarkisian's that guy.
No, he definitely is not.
Professor Mapes.
Doesn't seem like it.
We appreciate your time, and hopefully we can revisit this next week where you explain.
This is a new bit.
I'll get some like chalkboard effects or something.
Please do, yes.
Will you be my financial advisor? All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Has anybody ever tried to get you fired? Michelle Beadle has a story about a very popular NBA player doing just that. Plus, Charles Barkley, he's got solutions. That's next.
ESPN. 97.5. Vanessa and Gallant continues on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Paul, do you remember Michelle Beadle?
I do remember Michelle Beadle. How long has she been out of the game?
She went on a hiatus for like a year or so. Because she had gone...
Has it been a year? Honestly, I have no idea what happened.
No. She came back like 6 months ago.
To what?
She does a podcast for The Athletic.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she's not on ESPN or Fox Sports or something like that.
No. She does a podcast for The Athletic called What Did I Miss?
She just vanished because I remember Sports Nation was a show that I regularly had on in the background when I was in college.
Right.
Did I pay serious attention to it? No. But I always thought that she was charming, and I felt like when she was talking about the NBA, she was good. She did have that weird tangent where she's like, I just don't care about the NFL, and basically like stopped doing I think Get Up or whatever it was, right?
We'll get to that in a minute because she had talked about that on her new podcast. But Michelle Beadle was at ESPN from 2009 to 2012, and then she did a 2-year stint at NBC and then went back to ESPN.
Okay.
So she kind of jumped a little bit, but she left the game of media and went on that angry tangent, and it was on while she was hosting The Jump and while she was on ESPN the second time around. It's probably 3 years ago where she's like, I don't watch the NFL. I don't care about the NFL. Anybody who watches the NFL supports. And it, the things that she was mad about, she deserved to be mad about. I think it was like domestic violence type of deals. But she said she would never watch the NBA again.
NFL, right.
NFL, yeah. Excuse me. She would never watch the NFL again. And then it seemed like she was kind of just trying to get fired. And so she ended up taking a year and a half or so hiatus from the media game. Now she has reappeared. I think the podcast launched maybe in January or February with The Athletic called What Did I Miss? Where she kind of told her story about leaving ESPN and whatnot. One of the stories that she's told on that podcast involves an NBA great. And it is one LeBron James who apparently did not like Michelle Beadle and went so far as to be petty enough to try and get Michelle Beadle canned. This is Michelle Beadle in her own words.
Of course I took it personally. It was personal. Like, he wanted to be fired and tried to do that. And has had his people have been very rude to me. Like, whatever. But then I found out after the fact, like when all this sort of came out, I would get messages or I would get like texts or video from people being like exact same, like that kind of shit was happening to them too. Like, he was super petty and he would try to have some sort of an effect, whether it be small, but whatever, like just an effect. It's almost like to exhibit your power, I guess. Right. And look, no one's taking that away. I'll tell you, he's one of the most powerful people in that whole world. But that was never in question, which is why one has to wonder, when you have that much power and you're that large of an entity, mm-hmm. why are you sweating? 100%. Who cares what any of us say, honestly?
Yeah. Okay. So she brings up a good point. When you're that powerful of an entity and that power of a powerful of a player in a league, why are you trying to get Michelle Beadle fired from at the time it was NBA Countdown?
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Yeah, he is someone that has the rabbit ears. And it's amusing to, I think, a lot of people that you can have all of this power and you really just care about what others think of you. And it's funny because there's a lot of things that LeBron has done when it comes to the political maneuvering that he clearly has been able to manifest on the NBA. I mean, he's probably the most powerful piece in the league. You know, they sign him to short-term contracts where he can control who goes on the roster,
yeah,
and who is the head coach and stuff like that. And he does all sorts of things through his agency, but that he also feels the need to undermine media as if talking heads like us really form
right
that much opinion is, I guess, not surprising considering he is somebody who doesn't like it when you speak up against about like China's, you know, anti-human rights things.
This is one of the biggest differences between LeBron James and Michael Jordan that nobody ever talks about. Michael Jordan would say something to the journalist's face. I mean, and this happened. Like, if you ever talk to people that worked in Chicago and covered Michael Jordan, he would chew them out. He would say something to your face. It would be direct. You would know he was mad at you. He would not, like, do a bunch of things where his people called ESPN's people and all of that and just went full. Michael Jordan would say it to your face.
I'm sure he would potentially, if he really felt the need to, though, do some things behind the scenes. I'm not going to act like Michael Jordan was necessarily 100% above that. When you have that kind of power, you're just living in a totally different world. I just think LeBron's fake.
But why do you care? Yeah.
That's a great question as to why he cares. They're impacting my legacy. The kid from Akron, hashtag young king.
Hashtag underdog. Do we have a breaking news sounder? Or let's just do Paul Gallant. Paul Gallant's breaking news sounder?
Breaking news.
Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. He is always up on the media game, and he has a new report out.
Oh, wow. Skip Bayless to Fox?
Skip
Bayless going to join Fox News. That's incredible,
Vanessa. Tom Brady has earned the largest contract in sports casting history.
Good.
As it more than doubles both CBS's Tony Romo and ESPN's Troy Aikman.
Holy crap.
Fox Sports' deal to make Tom Brady its lead NFL game analyst after he retires is for 10 years and $375 million.
Wow.
It is the largest contract in sports casting history of any sport, of any network, ever, and we don't even know when it will begin. But it is for a decade and $375 million.
Can I get
$1 million?
Hey Tom, can I get like 0.25% for always worshiping you as a god? You know, it would be like a blessing that bestowed upon me. That is an insane amount of money.
I actually don't know what to say because that's so much money.
How else would you get him to keep working? I mean, you would have to pay him that much. And also, good. It would have been ridiculous if Tom Brady's getting paid as much as, like, hey, I'm Tony Romo. My biggest moment ever, I fumbled a snap. I fumbled a field goal attempt away. Or if you're Troy Aikman, where Troy Aikman was a good quarterback, but Aikman was never, like, godly like Tom Brady, you know? It was kind of like with Bradshaw, where he was around for the right time.
Buck will and Aikman combined, by the way, will make $33.5 million a year. Brady on his own will make $37.5 million a year.
Wow, man.
I mean, when these networks say that they don't have money and they lay people off, announcements like this always absolutely crack me up. When you have Stephen A. Smith making $8 million a year, and then they're like, ESPN's like, you know what? We actually had to lay off a bunch of our PAs and a bunch of our animation and graphics people because we just couldn't afford
their
$70,000 a year salary and benefits.
All right, well.
Tom Brady.
I mean, it's a lot of money for a guy who's never done it.
That's my thought, is how great would it be if he just stunk at it? If he was just bad.
There's a chance.
Like, not like boring. He was like stumbling and bad and just didn't know people's names.
The brand ambassador thing is, I think, the fallback option. Like, say it's not great, they could move Tom Brady into something else. Maybe he's actually done some sit-downs, some practice runs with them. And look, he does strike me as somebody who is extremely committed to whatever he does. Like he's not one to half-ass. You know, the stories about him working out and stuff are absolutely crazy. So I feel like he would, at the very least, put in the effort that Tony
Romo... Oh, he'll
get
coaching.
Romo, well, also, I think he'll work hard at it. Romo's lazy. He's not working hard at it anymore. Well, Sean, you're laughing, but am I wrong? Like, I mean, he was awful in the AFC Championship
game. That seems reckless that Tony Romo just is lazy.
How much did he butcher during the AFC Championship game? Like, when a game is out of hand, he gets bored and he, like, checks out. His calling card is predicting plays, and he's wrong on half of them. He makes a bunch of orgasm noises over the course of the broadcast. Like, I'm sorry. He adds energy. He has a lot of it. But is he putting in, like, all of the effort? Where he, at the end of a game, someone's asking, hey, he's like, hey, wait, should the Chiefs score, go for two or something here? There was some just absolutely boneheaded question that he asked to Jim Nance in the last 2 minutes of a game. I forget what it was.
I think it was about the Bengals. Should the Bengals let the Chiefs score a touchdown?
That one. Like, that was just moronic.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Come on. Well, look, Sean, okay, fine. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but I don't have a problem with that. He's getting paid more than Tom Brady, and that's why. Because Tony doesn't try as hard.
If you're Troy Aikman, rather, if you're Troy Aikman or Tony Romo, do you look at this and ask for another payday from your networks? Or do you just say, well, he's Tom Brady, he's the greatest?
You genuflect.
You what?
He genuflects.
What does that mean?
Oh, it's a Catholic thing.
I don't know what
that means. Where you drop one knee and do the sign of the cross.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
So he has to, he bows down.
I thought
down.
It was something dirty, which the Catholic Church would make sense.
Whoa, damn. Coming after the mob and the Catholic Church in one show. Have you not watched any of the Dan Brown book adaptation movies?
I'm going to die tonight.
That is not good.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, Charles Barkley has a solution for all the smack talking. Put your money where your mouth is. Plus our Garbage Time segment. That's next.
ESPN. 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I have another conspiracy theory.
Oh, God.
Tom Brady has been named the number one analyst for Fox Sports, but will also serve as a quote-unquote company ambassador.
Okay.
I think it may mean politics, too. I think it may not just be Fox Sports.
Ooh.
I think Tom Brady may be getting into the political game. We'll see.
Oh, yeah. He could be my dictator any day. Rule over all of us.
Whoa.
Save America, Tom.
Paul Gallant taking nice pictures with the Hawaiian shirt and cargo shorts.
Listen, if I'm a part of his, cabinet someday when he's president... Yeah. You'll know it all began here because I worship the man like he's a god. That's never ended horribly, worshiping a politician like
never.
He's a god.
Nope. Charles Barkley, by the way, has solutions.
Solutions?
Charles Barkley has solutions to anybody that would like to talk trash to athletes. We've heard this a lot,
mm-hmm.
whether it's everything going on with Kyrie Irving's family or Russell Westbrook having things shouted at him. Charles Barkley had this to say about what should be done.
I've always said, hey, we could put an end to all this stuff. Some of this stuff these fans say, just give me 5 minutes to send a quote with them until they say, you ain't going to press no charges. Nobody going to get it. No, ain't nobody going to be sued civilly. Say what you just said to me right to my face right here for these 5 minutes. I'm going to beat your ass, beat the hell out of you.
It would take you 5 minutes?
Oh, no, I'm going to take my time. I'm not going to beat them up quickly. I'm going to jab them a little bit, then I'm going to lay the haymakers on their ass.
Well, obviously.
I hear you, Foreman. Charles Foreman.
In a real world, in a real society.
I think Barkley's being serious,
other
right?
Other than Gladiator. Yeah. That,
no, we're purging people.
It's not happening.
We're purging people.
I think it's funny as it goes on. He's like, oh, I'm not going to do it quickly. It's going to be slow, and I'm going to beat his ass.
His point, though, that if these people in the stands had to say any of that to an athlete's face when they were standing there one-on-one in the middle of the court, those people would probably not say it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what cell phone cameras have done. It's made it so that people feel very comfortable saying absolutely horrible stuff that they would never say to somebody's face. And, I mean, I don't know what you really do about that, but in these situations... Players should have every right at the very least to clap back. And if they are doing something messed up, Those fans should be punished. This is obvious stuff, though.
And I said Kyrie Irving. It was Chris Paul, by the way. Chris Paul's family getting the quote-unquote unwanted hugs was the verbiage used.
And Chris Paul doesn't need to go out and tweet afterwards, this is unacceptable. Like, we're all in agreement here. There's no one that's like, well, actually, Chris Paul's mom was asking for it on Mother's Day. You know, no one said.
Yeah, everyone was already. Everyone was either unaware of the situation or already on CP3's side. I don't know who was like the hey, when you go to Dallas, that's what you get.
Yeah, that, especially when there's some kid named Grayson or whatever the hell his name is. He looked like he had just some absolute rich person obnoxious name. Here's Hunter, here shoving Chris Paul's mom. I'm trying to think of other ones. Colby. Old Preston the Third here.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Charles Barkley says a lot of wild things, but this is one I could probably get behind.
I think we could all get behind it. It would be great entertainment. I mean, yeah, back in the day, you know, back during that TV show, when it was actually taking place, the Winning Time show.
Yeah.
Where you actually need
things. I need to watch that, by the way.
To happen in between, you know, during commercial breaks and stuff, where you have... who's that lady that has the bowls and she rides on a unicycle? A Red Panda, I think,
yes,
that comes
Red
to
Panda,
Rockets
yes.
games
she does
every
like
now and then.
Halftime shows.
Which is really cool, but honestly, I prefer to watch a fan just getting his ass beat by a player. I'm not going to lie.
That would be really fun.
Listen, we act like we're so much removed from the days of the gladiators, but we're not. We're bloodthirsty savages, and I think we would all appreciate some fan who we all think is a piece of crap to get his ass kicked.
It is time, Paul. You know what it's time for?
It's time for garbage time.
Time for garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
All right. There was a picture of a UFO taken from 10,000 feet in the air. It appears to show a metallic disc flying over the land. Do you believe in UFOs?
I don't, and the problem I have with this, and I'll retweet it out, at Gallant Says, at Sports Vanessa, at Sean A. Mapes, at ESPN 975. There's a picture, it's black and white, it shows what looks like a lake, and it shows what looks like the Costa Rican coast, and then there is a flying saucer that apparently was captured over one frame. The negative was released.
50 years old.
50 years old. If you take a look at it, I mean, it looks like it's something that could have been photoshopped in. And I guess I just have a hard time believing that something that, per this, taken from 10,000 feet, that was apparently 150 to 200 feet probably in diameter. I have a hard time believing that the depictions that sci-fi movies have of aliens is actually going to be what aliens look like. That, to me, is, I guess, where I'm having the most difficult time believing. And you could Photoshop people's faces out in the 1920s. Take a look at anything that has Russian leaders from the early days of the Soviets and the Bolsheviks and the Russian Revolution. They were incredible at Photoshopping like people out of pictures.
Ooh.
And this was in like the 1920s and
30s. I didn't know Photoshop had been around that long.
No, it's been, you could, I mean, I took photography, black and white photography in high school. You can actually do a lot of stuff to doctor a photo from the negative. That's
yeah, it wasn't Photoshop. It was about like when you would develop the photos, because you had to actually like develop the film yourself.
Thank you, Professor Mapes.
Mm-hmm.
My dad is legitimately a photographer.
Oh, really?
Cool. Okay. Didn't know that.
We're learning a lot today.
Okay. But this picture, and I'm retweeting it out right now, at Gallant Says, at Sports Vanessa, at Shawnee Mapes, at ESPN 97.5. It looks like it's Photoshopped.
In general, where do you stand on UFOs and aliens?
I think that there's a very good chance that there is life in this universe that is not ours. I think the idea that they would stumble across us during the entirety of the universe's history, during a 2,000-year span where we actually, as creatures, are competent enough to know what's up there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they might have come across Earth when there were dinosaurs. I feel like they could have come across Earth. They might come across Earth when we're all gone and this planet's like a desert wasteland. We're all dead.
I think they're aliens, but they're not like the green guys with the antennas. I think it's like less sexy. I think it's just things that might quote unquote have life to them. I just know that there are other like humans out there.
I bet there are something that's a lot like us.
What about
us.
You, Sean?
I just don't think they're ever going to stumble across us at the time that we are right now. I don't think it's going
to happen. Well, what if they can travel across time? Across dimensions?
Ooh.
Not to get too whoa, but yeah.
I don't know, because I feel like...
What if they don't play by our rules?
I suppose. I mean, anything's possible, yeah. Right? It's a massive universe, but I just have a hard time. It's such a massive universe, and we're not that advanced. They would have to legitimately get to this specific point of the universe to determine whether or not there is actual intelligent life here. And then they would have to send over the rest of their ships, and that could take years. And by the time they get some of their ships over, their civilization might not exist anymore.
You have thought about this.
Yeah, and I didn't even smoke today.
Speaking of no intelligent life, it's not very intelligent if you're a corrections officer to escape with an inmate, but that's exactly what Vicky White did with Casey White, no relation. Mm. And they went from Alabama and ended up in my home state of Indiana. They were caught in Evansville, Indiana. Vandenberg County Sheriff Dave Wedding confirmed Casey White, 38 years old, former corrections officer Vicky White, 56, taken into custody. Vicky White did end up shooting and killing herself, but this was the manhunt.
Very just heartwarming story.
It was very sad. Quite a manhunt over the last week and a half, and those two were caught after what seems like a steamy romance between the 6'9 manslaughter convict and the corrections officer.
He's 6'9"?
He was 6'9", which is why which is why I knew that they would get caught, because this man was huge and was on the run. And it ended up being, there are heroes among us, a man that owns a car wash in Evansville, Indiana, called the police and said, yeah, that convict from Alabama, I think he's at my car wash. And the authorities were basically like, I don't think so. And he's like, no, there's a 6'9" here guy with tattoos that looks like a convict at my car wash, and it ended up being them. So shout out to him. I hope he gets some reward money.
Yeah, shout out to the heartland of America.
Thank you. Thank you. We're honest people. We see fugitives. We know we need to report them. What were they doing in Indiana? I don't know. I think they wanted to argue about class basketball and watch the movie Hoosiers.
Or have a lot of sex. Like, let's be honest.
Very steamy.
She's 56. He's 30. She was 56. He's 38.
Right.
Yikes.
Yeah, she was. Was because she chose.
Wow, thanks for explaining suicide, Vanessa. Thank you.
No, I mean, she had worked at a prison and
what
she knew.
Yeah, no, story. I mean, think about being a former corrections officer getting sent to prison. It wouldn't be a nice time for old Vicky White.
She could have used a correction or two, in my opinion.
Yeah, she definitely could have. Meanwhile, the man who grew a penis on his arm,
yeah, our guy,
wants a date with Kate Beckinsale.
Get in line, Buster. I'm up first.
Don't
Kate?
We all?
Kate, I like cats, Kate, and I'm younger, so like we got two things going on. Reasonably attractive.
Beckinsale.
Regional celebrity. You know? I mean, haven't you always wanted to date a radio man?
What happened was Beckinsale had actually taken to Instagram to share a story about McDonald that she thought was funny, and now he's very thrilled to be on her radar, telling the newspaper, I'm ready for dating again, so why not? I'll even treat her to a pint down at my local boozer.
The British are so classy. I'll treat her to a point. A point. She'll have a point, and we'll have a finest steamed mash and some sausage.
Meanwhile, an Edgefield County man is dead after he died of a heart attack while burying a woman
in
his backyard.
Vanessa, this is the most.
I added this one because I knew she would love it.
On the rundown.
Honestly, you two.
Murder is mean.
And he's burying a body and he gets a heart attack.
Yeah, I'm
burying
out.
A body.
I'm out. You guys, you just brought this segment down.
South Carolina. Joseph McKinnon strangled Patricia Dent inside the home, which was extremely mean.
Sound more happy about it.
And then he started burying her in the backyard. As he was burying sweet Patricia, he gets a heart attack and dies. I'm sorry,
justice.
That's karma. Goodbye, Earl, by the Dixie Chicks.
It did end on a good note.
Yeah, it's an uplifting story of a man burying a body in
his
backyard.
It's also going to be extremely uplifting when we realize that one of those bodies in the barrels was Jimmy Hoffa.
She did a,
can't wait.
Well, he died per the Irishman, he died in Detroit. I don't know. Were they going to ship his body out to Vegas from Detroit? I don't know.
You never know. All right, this has been another episode.
We just talked about suicide and death.
Vanessa and Galan, our producer, God. Sean Mapes. Of course, thank you guys for listening. I'm at Sports Vanessa. He is at Gallant Says Sean A. Mapes on Twitter. Make sure you make it out, by the way, to our listener party. That's going to be tomorrow at St. Arnold Brewery. Keyshawn Johnson will be there.
Can't wait. That's going
to
be fun.
From ESPN, we are really excited to hang out with you guys, drink some beer, eat some pizza, and talk with Keyshawn Johnson. All right, you got Joel Blank, you got Jeremy Branham up next with the Killer Bees from 12 to 3 on ESPN Radio. Thanks, guys.
Peace.
ESPN 97.5.